615 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
And this is Nick.
And this is a Marvel Chronology episode. We're continuing the chronology with our Thanos reading order. And today we're going to be talking about Thanos Rising number 4. But before we do that, I want to give Nick a chance because he wasn't unable to join when we talked about issue 3. So I just want to get his thoughts on issue 3. Before we do that, real quick, apologies. I know this episode's coming out a little late. If you caught up on some of the other late episodes I've put out lately, you'll know the reason why. I had relatives staying at the house long after Thanksgiving. 10 days. They came for 10 days after Thanksgiving. Came for a few days before Thanksgiving too. It was just a really long time to have house guests, and one of them can't hear, and the TV's super loud, and it made it really, really challenging. So apologies for missing a few episodes. We will get all caught up. They will all be released, and hopefully that will happen. I was hoping this last weekend, but I was on call for the day job, and it got a little hectic. So we will be caught up soon, I promise you. So let's hear your thoughts, Nick, on issue 3. Anything to mention or add? I mean, almost anticlimactic at this point because you've read issue 4.
Yeah.
So, but
well, if you could think back looking at to the first page of 4, not knowing I'd have to talk about 3, I could already tell that 3 was the peaceful issue, or at least where Thanos was trying to find peace, and he wasn't killing, and he was just having children all over the place, and like just leaving, not doing anything violent, and trying not to be violent, but trying to find a purpose. That's an interesting issue, you know, for Thanos. Interesting kind of path to go on after the extreme of murdering his mother. To join a pirate crew, but to also not be murdering on a pirate crew. So, man, it's interesting that, I mean, all these kids do seem to look like him. I think he has some comment about this kid's only look like his, like, mate.
Yeah. I don't think he can see it. His genes are clearly the dominant ones.
Yeah.
But the other thing about it is, with him denying, you know, kind of repressing his urges, taking a vow, you know, not to kill anymore, trying to find a different way to live, you almost think of it as kind of self-hatred in a way. You know, he knows what he is. In a way, he's ashamed of what he is. He hasn't embraced it and really accepted it. You know what I mean? And uh-huh. So he's denying himself, and you can tell that he's bored and miserable, and just, you know, it's not until the end when he gives in to those, you know, urges and kind of embraces who he is once again that he really seems to come alive, right? He finally has that spark that makes him Thanos.
God, he's a real, like, Don Juan out there, too. Like just everybody. He's just every planet Thanos is just cleaning up. Like, not just having, like, one-night stands, but having kids on, like, every planet. You're like, geez, Thanos.
Kids and wives. You wouldn't think that scrotum chin would be that attractive, but apparently, apparently it is. Better than a butt chin, apparently, for getting the girls.
Oh, yeah. It's always Thanos over Ben Affleck, you know.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and dive into issue 4. You know, now that Thanos has made his peace with who he is to some extent, you know, we saw at the end of last issue, he went back to his home planet and was goaded on by that female friend that's always been a part of his life to, hey, prove you love me. If you really love me, you won't share yourself with anyone else. And that includes all the ones that you've shared yourself with to this point, girl in every port. You need to go out there, murder every one of them, and also every one of your offspring. So this issue, well, let me give the creative team quickly. Written by Jason Aaron, pencils by Simone Bianchi, inks and ink wash. There's ink wash in this particular issue. Also by Simone Bianchi and Riccardo Peraccini. Colors are by Yves Forcina, and letters are by VC's Clayton Cowles. We've got a variant cover by Mike Diodato and Frank Martin Jr. And it doesn't say who did the regular cover, so I'm just going to assume that that was Simone Bianchi.
What's Ink Wash?
What's Ink Wash?
Yeah.
Similar to watercolor.
Okay. I just haven't seen that come up either. I mean, like, as someone new to comics, when you said that, I'm like, oh, I've never seen that as a credit.
Yeah. I usually don't either. I mean, usually it's just folded in with inks. There's plenty of inkers that use Ink Wash. Because
like Jessica Jones definitely the Jessica Jones run definitely uses that style. But yeah,
like if you look at the first page of the actual story, where it's that full page and he's firing the blast from his gauntlet.
Yeah.
Do you
looking
see
it right now?
Yeah, in the upper right, that explosion with all the ink, and it looks like it's like liquid splatter.
Ah.
That's Ink Wash.
That's good.
Yeah.
Cool.
Or it's Simone Bianchi's way to cover up where he spilled his coffee.
Either way, it looks sweet.
So, like I said, the first page is a really awesome double page, or not double page, but full page splash of Thanos. This is the first time we've seen him fire these energy blasts from his hands, and that's a really great image. And he also got to call out Yves Farchina's color work because that's excellent as well. A very bright image considering what the subject matter is and the fact that it's Thanos. And I love the dialogue boxes here. No one knows how many beings Thanos has murdered over the years, least of all Thanos. He stopped keeping count the day he strangled the last of his children. That was many months ago. And at some point, he even asks one of his crewmen, how many worlds have we raised? Like, how many people have we killed? He says, I couldn't say, Captain. I don't believe I was ever taught to count that high. And the crewman also asked permission to take trophies now that the planet is secure. And Thanos grants it, but says, bones only. This time, no more skins or chunks of flesh. Our ship smells foul enough as it is. So these guys have really been busy. They've been really busy. We also see Thanos mention that his energy projection experiments appear to have been successful. The new powers are working adequately. And it does feel strange to kill without being drenched in blood or innards. Because again, you know, when that double or that initial splash page where we see Thanos firing the energy gauntlets, it's the first time we see that power. Apparently, he did some kind of genetic experimentation on himself and granted himself these powers. But because before that, it was always, you know, strength and using bladed weapons and all that. But him and his crew have been so busy. Thanos even remarks that mass murder has become so very dull. So as he stands there after asking his crewmen about the count, he wonders aloud that someone's been keeping count. And maybe after today, it will finally be and before he can complete the thought of be enough. It turns out the planet wasn't as secure as they thought. There's one survivor left, and he attacks Thanos with a blade. And Thanos just kind of stands there and takes it, being stabbed repeatedly, as this guy says, die, monster, die, 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 die. And Thanos is, backhands him casually and asks, who are you? And the guy's like, man, you don't even realize, you don't even care what you took from me today. And Thanos is like, a family, a wife, a child? And he says, everyone, right? The whole planet, they're all gone. And Thanos says, well, if it's any consolation, I bore no grudge against any of these people. The deaths meant nothing. Like, why? I don't know why that would make the guy feel better. If anything, it's going to make him feel worse, right? And he asks Thanos, why? Why are they dead? And Thanos' response is, would you believe because of love, right? Like, he thinks he loves this female childhood friend of his that's been the only one that's believed in him all this time. And she wants the death of thousands, apparently. And Thanos loves her, and he's got to prove himself to her, and that's why he's doing this. So the native of the planet says, no, you're even mocking the dead as you trot upon their still warm ashes. A thing like you knows nothing of love. You know, you're Thanos the Mad. You'll suffer for thousands of years for the wrong you've done. He's like, I do suffer. She makes sure of that, right? Again, he can't find peace. He can't find balance. He can't find someone to love him. He believes he has this great capacity for love. I would argue that that just isn't the case. He only thinks he does. But he does want to belong and can't seem to find a place to belong. So he says, if you really want to know who's to blame, who the one you should be sobbing to, go talk to her. Go find out, you know, how long is enough? How many bodies have to pile up? And the native of the planet's like, go to whom? What madness do you? And Thanos interrupts, says, go! Go ask her if it's enough. So the guy's like, okay. Walks into the ship, into Thanos' bedchamber. Hello, is anyone there? Walks in, sees a corpse. Turns around, comes back out, vomits. And Thanos said, well, what did she say? And he's like, she said nothing. Right? I mean, the guy, it's a dead body. What's it going to say? And Thanos' response is, well, then it's not enough. And as the guy tries to explain, well, she said nothing because she is already dead, I imagine he was going to say. Thanos blasts him and says it'll never be enough. He calls for his crew, back to the ship, you dogs. We've more worlds to rape and burn. And as he approaches the portal to his ship, he sees his lady love there waiting for him. Meanwhile, back on Titan, we see his father, Alars, or Mentor, as he's known, speaking with Thanos' grandfather. And he's telling him, you know, it's too late to save your wife. Perhaps you can save the rest of the cosmos from your mad butcher of a son. If you stop this moping, go after him, right? Like, Mentor is one of the smartest beings in the entire galaxy. He can figure out a way to defeat Thanos, but he won't hear it. Alars believes that Thanos did not, in fact, murder his own mother and says, no child is capable of murdering their own mother. And he just won't hear it. He says, you know, I'm his father. I know him best. And he was a good boy, an impeccable student, treated fairly. There's no reason that he would. And his father says, well, if you don't do something, I will. He says, I am doing something, father. I'm asking you to leave. And his father's response is, well, then you'd best get to digging more graves, starting with your own. So meanwhile, back on Thanos' ship, we see his lady love head into his chamber saying, actually, it's his lab, saying, I wonder where you were hiding. What are you doing toiling away in here? And Thanos, ever the passive aggressive, I haven't killed anyone in almost a day. Have you come to berate me for my laziness? And she says, well, maybe I've come to fall into your massive purple arms and shower you with passionate kisses. And of course, Thanos doesn't buy it for a second. It's like, or maybe you've come to lie to me like I'm still a moon-faced boy. And her response to that is, well, maybe if you stopped acting like a boy and embraced your destiny, it would be easier for me to embrace you. And again, he asks that question, when will it be enough, woman? Enough worlds, enough corpses, give me a number. And she says, enough? Enough for what? For you to be satisfied, to lay with me, you know, to be my bride. And she says, to love you? Because that's what he always has wanted, right? But he doesn't answer it specifically. He just says, to do as you've always promised, which she's never made a promise, right? It's always innuendo with her and suggestion. And she basically says, it will be enough once you're no longer interested in asking the question, once you're a god, what you were born to be, right? A supreme being, before whom all life trembles. And here's a bit of foreshadowing. She says, the destroyer who holds all of infinity in the palm of his hand and isn't afraid to squeeze. Thanos argues, I am that. I burn worlds on a whim, slaughter without thought. Anything I want is mine. I end that god now and forever. And she says, well, now who's telling lies? The god I love isn't afraid of anything, most especially not himself. Because again, I think even at this point, I would argue that Thanos hasn't accepted who he really is. He hasn't accepted the fact that he murders because he loves to murder. That's who he is. He's not doing it for love. He's doing it because that's who he is. And then she suggests, or the world where he was born, right? Don't be afraid of the world you were born, Thanos. Thanos catches his reflection in the mirror and just loses his temper, calls for his guard, says, seize her, lock her away in the coldest, darkest cell you can find. Maybe then she'll warm to my touch. And his crew members are like, with all due respect, Captain, her who? And this is when the realization finally starts to set in as the girl starts laughing. He's like, why can't they see you? What have you done to them? Nothing. If you want to be treated like a child, or if you don't want to be treated like a child, you should stop acting like one. You know why they can't see me. But Thanos has never admitted to himself. Now we see some flashbacks of her back on the planet, and she was never really there, right? It's all in his mind. And, you know, like two girls having a conversation that she supposedly was in, but really not. They never addressed her. She's like, no one can see me. No one ever has. No one but you. And Thanos asking if she ever went to class. No, of course not. She didn't exist. And he says, but my men, they think you're quite mad. the Mad Titan indeed. They see you arguing with thin air, sometimes dragging rotted corpses into your bedchamber, only to sob and beg them to touch you. And Thanos is denying it, like, no, this can't be. And her response is, well, then tell me my name, dear Thanos. I've been your friend since you were a boy. Surely you must know my name. No, not even a guess. And she finally reveals herself. I'm Death, you idiot boy. The only thing you've ever loved.
Called it.
The
Called
only being in all creation who could ever possibly love you back. So, yeah, I mean.
Sweet page, too.
Yeah, really sweet page. I think when I initially read it, I didn't catch on that it was Death in the first issue. But I think by issue two, it becomes relatively obvious, especially if you know the history of Thanos. And that he's always loved Death and tried to marry her and make Death his bride. And I would argue that, to Death's credit, you know, Aaron does a great job of writing her as very unlikable, you know, and petty and whatever. So when you find out she's Death, all that behavior makes sense. That personality makes sense. But you also could make the argument that Death has been Thanos' constant companion. Right, from the time he was born. So even if he wasn't aware of it or was in denial or whatever, Death has always been the one thing that's always been by Thanos' side. I mean, you could even argue that that is what drove his mother mad when she laid eyes on him after his birth, right? He even says, I saw Death in his eyes. So Death has always been there, whether Thanos has wanted to admit it or not. And she goes on to tell him, I'll love you, Thanos, with a passion that will melt the stars, and together we'll burn all life as we know it and make love in their steaming remains. That's quite a turn of phrase from Jason Aaron. And by the way, she's peeled off all her skin at this point. She's just and her muscle and sinew, and she's just a skeleton. And she says, what's the matter, Thanos, my love? Am I not more beautiful than ever? And he literally blasts her in the skull and runs off as she's taunting him, saying, Thanos, where are you going, dear? Come here and give your true love a kiss. And where he's actually headed is the flame chamber of the ship, where it's kind of like the drive, if you will, the combustion chamber, killing any crew members that get in his way as he goes, and some of them trying to hold him back. Again, they're used to this guy being just totally off his rocker, right? Thanos the Mad. And he eventually gets into the combustion chamber. And the crewman that was on his back bursts into flames. Thanos is made of a bit sturdier stuff, so he's able to withstand the temperature. And he thinks to himself, one step is all it would take. Thanos of Titan hadn't hesitated when he murdered his own children and every lover he'd ever known. He'd shown no pause when putting world after world to the torch or even eviscerating his own mother. But finally, Thanos had found someone he could not kill. Himself. And you want to talk about a page that that kind of sums up Thanos' early years in one great looking image. It's that full page there by Simone Bianchi.
Absolutely.
Thanos having fallen to his knees, head in his hands, as he comes to the realization that as much killing as he's done, as much self-hatred and self-loathing as he has, he's a creature of survival. And he can't bring himself to destroy himself. So as he leaves the combustion chamber, Death is there to taunt him again, saying, foolish Thanos, suicide is never the answer, only murder is. And Thanos' response is, you did this to me, you made me a monster. And this is kind of what I was getting at. Death says, you were born a monster. Even your own mother saw it. All I did was help you along. And it is a beautiful potential, the most beautiful I've seen in centuries. And Thanos... He ignores that. Again, he started to accept more of who he is, and he seems to have weathered the brief madness that was caused by her overt revealing of herself and who she is. But he still is in a way is personifying Death, because he says, "You will love me no matter who has to die." And Death's response is, "Yes, just say the words and make it so." And he tells what's remains of his crew. You lay in a new course. Take us to Titan. And I really wish the issue had ended right there, because I think that's a great line to end on. Mm-hmm. Take us to Titan. But then for some reason, Aaron added in and ready the bombs. It just seems kind of anticlimactic. It's just such a great image right there with the take us to Titan. So yeah, you know, to my point earlier, I think that death has been the one being, the one entity, the one at like literally an aspect of Thanos himself in a way that has always been there from the very beginning. It may not have manifested itself in his earliest years because maybe he didn't have the maturity and death just kind of lay in wait. But, you know, he wasn't too old before she started grooming him, right? She saw the potential in him from the start. So it's an interesting concept to think about, like, so why Thanos? Why this being? Why this genetic abnormality? Why did death decide at the moment of his birth, perhaps it was the moment of his conception, perhaps somewhere in between, to kind of choose him to be her champion in a way? I mean, there's any number of really powerful beings in the Marvel Universe that she could have chosen to kind of nurture or attempt to corrupt. You know, people talk about Galactus as, you know, sort of a galactic force of nature, but, you know, he can destroy planets just as easily as Galactus, or as Thanos rather, in a much quicker way, right? I mean, if there's any other being in the Marvel Universe who's responsible for, you know, millions of deaths in a moment, it would be Galactus. But for whatever reason, she's chosen Thanos, and it is, as much as I hate to admit it, because Thanos is pretty much a, you know, a son of a bee, they do make a great team. Thanos and Death, you know, it goes together like peanut butter and jelly, lamb and tuna fish, if you like that analogy, to quote an Adam Sandler movie. But I really do feel like issue 4 is my favorite of the series, because I feel like in this moment, with that scene of Thanos on his knees, head in hands, making the decision that, no, I'm unable to kill myself, I'm not going to kill myself, it's really in that moment that he becomes the Thanos that we all kind of know and love. You know, the character that you kind of love to hate. And you see it in that image, take us to Titan. So I really do feel like this is where Thanos becomes Thanos. He gets his energy blast powers in this issue. We see him come to the realization that death is the one constant companion and what he truly loves, the entity of death, and that it'll never be enough. He'll never be able to spread enough death and destruction and mayhem to please her and to have her love him in the way that he wants to be loved, because I don't think death is capable of that kind of emotion, both from an aspect of she's not, you know, a human being with emotions, and also because it just goes against her very nature. So this is where we really get that idea that what Thanos becomes is someone who's futilely striving for something that can never be, and in that way he's kind of tragic. But at the same time, he's unrelenting, right? Because he'll never give up. He'll never accept that. He always thinks, I'm just one more death away from finally winning death's hand, you know? Like, he gets the Infinity Gauntlet, snaps his fingers, and destroys half the entire – the life and half the entire universe. And that's not enough. So he could destroy the whole universe. It wouldn't be enough for death. She's insatiable. So again, my favorite issue, just because it's where Thanos really, in my mind, becomes the Thanos that I always loved as a character from, I think, the first time that I read a story with Thanos, and it was the Death of Captain Marvel graphic novel from Jim Starlin. So what are your thoughts on issue 4, Nick?
I liked it a lot because, yeah, I'm glad we're past geeky college and high school Thanos, and we're on to like the Thanos, the big old bulky Thanos that I can picture Josh Brolin's voice in my head with. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I like it. I really like the art in this book quite a bit. Just Thanos and kind of all, I don't know, just a combination of different things.
Yeah.
And I told you about Lady Death. I called it too.
Yeah, you called it pretty early. But yeah, Thanos has really evolved too. I mean, the art in the entire series by Simone Bianchi is really great, but he really has evolved. And that's something else. Like, I think even in issue 3, he wasn't quite as big or bulky, as recognizable as the Thanos that we all kind of know. But in this issue, he really, you know, he looks like Thanos. What about the whole, like, sowing the wild oats thing and then going back and killing it? I can't help but in a way, think about the fact that there must have been something about him, some kind of charisma, despite his, you know, purple skin and, you know, weird looking chin or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting that his mother was able to see the death in him, the evil, you know, whatever it was, that aura around him. But all these other women fall for him without being able to see it. And I'm kind of reminded of Ted Bundy in a way, right? Like, everybody always talks about how Ted Bundy was such a ladies' man, you know, good looking guy and was charming and everything. And, you know, ended up being this horrific serial killer. You can almost think that's, you know, Thanos times 1,000. He doesn't look like Ted Bundy, but I mean, I don't know. out there in the Marvel cosmic, you know, galaxy, maybe Thanos is a real looker. I don't know.
He's definitely strong.
Yeah.
He's like looking at the Hulk or something when you're like, oh, I'm like a giant muscular purple dude.
Yeah. That's a good point. If you're living kind of in the places where Thanos met these women and, you know, bred, these aren't exactly laps of luxury. They're more kind of the, you know, the underbelly of society where, somebody who's really strong.
The strongest guy around.
Yeah. Could protect you and provide for you. There's got to be a lot of attraction in that for sure. And obviously we know there's been there's a few of his offspring, despite the fact he thinks he's killed them all. There are a few of his offspring that perhaps survive. I mean,
what I was going to ask you, actually.
Well, Gamora is an adopted daughter.
Because in the movies, they're all adopted children. That's why I wanted to ask you.
Nebula
in the comics, are they? Nebula's adopted in the movies too.
So in Nebula, I'm never quite sure. It depends. I don't know what the current state is. I know times she's been. Oh no, Nebula's his granddaughter. No, Nebula's
that's
his
right.
Nebula's his daughter. No, Nebula's his adopted daughter. No,
oh,
Nebula's
like his changing it. Yeah, you know, I've heard granddaughter before.
Yeah, it just depends on. I don't know what current continuity is.
In the movie, the Black Order are also all his adopted children. Do they have any relation to Thanos in the comic? The Black Order, not the Dark Order.
The Black Order. I don't think so. I think they're more just kind of soldiers that he recruited, mercenaries in a way.
Well, they call them Thanos's children too, but they mean adopted children.
Yeah, I think, you know.
I think Ebony Maw and I can't name the rest of them.
I think in the comics they're kind of considered his children, right now, I mean, there's a Black Order miniseries that's coming out right now, and they've kind of, Thanos is currently dead, and
they were in the that one Avengers miniseries in a big way, not miniseries, but the weekly Avengers comic.
Oh, No Surrender.
No Surrender. It was them versus another army, and that was the Game Master versus the Challenger. Those were their armies, and that was what the whole storyline was all about, is they were competing for energy pyramids on Earth, and the Avengers were intervening.
Yeah, I think that the Infinity series was kind of big for them.
Still finishing.
Kind of where they, where they showed up. But they've showed up other places too, and I read the first issue of Black Order, didn't really like it. It's kind of boring.
Yeah.
I may pick up the second issue just to see if it – you know, which direction it goes. If it gets better, I'll stick with it. If it gets worse, obviously I'll drop it. If it stays flat, I'll probably drop it as well.
That comic can't last long.
Yeah, it's only like a 5-issue mini, I think, or 4-issue mini.
Okay,
so.
Yeah.
I do notice, not to completely change the subject here, but, you know, we were talking about Marvel movies. I do notice on the wall behind you a certain poster for an upcoming film.
You recognize it. Yeah,
I do. I do, because I just ordered the in my latest DCBS shipment. I guess it's the one that comes book shipping in January. There's a new Captain Marvel #1 coming out, written by Kelly Thompson. Mm-hmm. And they had a variant cover that's that image. And it was like 4 times as much as the regular cover. But I went ahead and pulled the trigger on it because it just looks so good. But the other reason I mention it is because the newest trailer debuted during Monday Night Football.
Have you already seen it?
Tonight, as we're recording this. Well, as we're recording,
I got a text that I premiered while we're recording this.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it either. I have the football game on this iPad next to me. but I'm not really watching it because I'm, you know, paying attention to what they're doing. But I did notice that it came on, and I, you know, I have the sound turned down and everything. So I talked about it before about how, you know, I'm way behind on Marvel movies. Really want to get caught up. I really want to get caught up. And I mean, it would really be great to be caught up before Captain Marvel comes out. I just don't really think that's possible because it's been like 4 months since I said I was going to start watching them. I haven't watched a single one.
If we need to, I can feed you the essential ones.
But I'm a completist. I'm a comic book, I'm a comic book, you know, collector. I want to read it all. It's just a matter of making it a priority. But the whole reason I mentioned is even if I'm not caught up, I'm going to see Captain Marvel on opening weekend. It just looks so great. Even though Brie Larson, I don't know that I've seen any movies with her in it. So I'm not a fan. I don't dislike her. I think my first choice would have been Emily Blunt. I really like her. Mm-hmm. I thought,
you didn't even see 21 Jump Street?
21 Jump Street. The first one I saw, yeah.
Jonah Hill. And she's the girl high school girl who Jonah Hill's character is interested in.
Huh.
The whole time.
I saw it once.
The first movie I saw her in. I mean, she's also older than high school in that movie, just like Jonah Hill.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, I saw it once. I don't really remember it that well, to be honest with you. And obviously she didn't make
I was shocked at that. I looked at her page and I was like, oh yeah, she was in 21 Jump Street.
She obviously
that
didn't.
Girl was her.
She obviously didn't make an impression on me. So, but yeah, I think Emily Blunt, because I love that movie that Tom Cruise, what is it? Edge of Tomorrow?
Edge of Tomorrow, yeah.
Yeah. I think, didn't they change the name when they
brought it on DVD? Well, the poster said Live, Die, Repeat as like a tagline, and people thought that was the title of the movie. I was working at movie theaters at the time, and they'd be like, give me a ticket to the Tom Cruise movie. They'd say, give me a ticket to Live, Die, Repeat. So on the Blu-ray case, they made that the big title and put Edge of Tomorrow really small, like it was a secondary title.
That is a highly underrated movie that
I've
probably seen that movie 25 times. I love that movie. But anyway, Emily Blunt for Captain Marvel would have been great. I mean, maybe Brie Larson will do a great job. I mean, the movie looks fantastic. And we're starting to hear rumblings about Jude Law's character, who previously people thought he was playing Captain Marvel. And now they're saying that he could be another character. I'm not going to spoil it here in case you haven't heard the news of who he might be playing. I do like that because Jude Law, to me, he's just not big and heroic and hunky enough to play Captain Marvel. So I hope that if he's playing somebody else, I'd be fine with that. But yeah, I am looking forward to that movie. But I'm also looking forward to another movie that hits before Captain Marvel. And I haven't seen any trailers for it at all, but I'm really, except maybe the very first one. Did I see the first one? No, I haven't seen any trailers for it. But I'm really excited. Is there buzz around the theater about that, the other upcoming movie? You know, the one I'm referring to, right?
I don't know. There's three other upcoming superhero movies in December. So I don't know which one you're referring to.
I'm referring to the big one, the one that matters. There's Aquaman? Three super. Yeah. Aquaman.
Well, because there's also a Spider-Man film that's at 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, the animated one.
I don't count the animated ones. And isn't that already out?
And there's the Deadpool re-release with the PG-13 rating and Fred Savage for 15 minutes.
Yeah, I don't count that either.
I didn't know you'd seen a lot of the DCEU movies. Because Aquaman is getting good buzz, and it is the bigger one.
Yeah. But... yeah, I've seen all the DCEU. I don't think it's called that anymore either, by the way.
Well, it's called Worlds of DC, but this is still like the same continuity as Justice League and like
that's
Wonder
true.
Woman.
That's true. We're breaking our rule talking a little movie talking right now, but Spider-Verse already come out? I thought that came out this last Friday.
No, it comes out December 14th, I think. That's a Friday.
A week before. So many people have been talking about it, and so many people I know have already seen it. I just assumed that everybody's
reviewed so well.
I heard.
I know it's animated, but like,
yeah.
Did you see Venom? No, of course, you didn't see Venom.
No, God.
But even this isn't a spoiler.
Even if I was caught up, I wouldn't have seen Venom. It looked awful.
I went to review it. Plus, Venom's my first favorite comic character back in the day. But I like Venom better than Spider-Man back in the day when I knew nothing about comics.
And how bad was it?
It's awful. It's an awful movie.
Yeah.
But there's some it becomes a comedy and it becomes acceptable once it's a comedy, even though it's entirely against the entire first hour, which sets up a really dark movie. Then it becomes a comedy between him and a suit that talks to him in his head, which works okay. But the only reason I bring it up is the second post-credit sequence says, "Meanwhile, in another dimension, no, in another universe." And then it cuts to a 5-minute clip from Into the Spider-Verse. And it was a good 5-minute clip because like Sony's playing, they are kind of introduced, they're playing around with that already. The multiverse more than anyone else has really discussed the multiverse. Especially with that. And I mean, that scene's obviously a cheap tie-in to get people to see footage for the next movie to watch it. But the fact that they're considering multiverses is fun. Especially since it's rumored they're going to take back Spider-Man from Marvel.
Yeah, because Venom did so well, right? That's what I heard.
Venom did so well, and the contract only included 5 films, which ends with the next Spider-Man film.
Yeah, it's a mistake. They're going to crash and burn again. And
absolutely.
I'm honestly Venom down. Like even if I liked Venom and the movie didn't look awful, I don't know if I would have gone to see it. I'm kind of Venomed out at this point. I think he's a character that needs to be, to have some air of mystery about him and show up like every once in a while to keep him special, you know? But now that he has his own title and Donny Cates is adding like all this complicated continuity and like, okay, there were symbiotes on the planet like long before Venom and, you know, there's all,
I'm not all caught up.
He's,
but if you want to discuss the comics, I loved first host. I didn't love, but I was okay. I'm reading a lot of the recent Venom. I'm not all the way caught up. I like first host and I like Web of Venom or whatever. Yeah, and I've read a few of those.
Yeah.
I am kind of digging the new mythology to Venom.
I guess if you're a big symbiote fan, but again, my argument is that it takes away the specialness because there's so many of them and there should be one, the original alien costume, and that's it. Doesn't need to be a whole alien race or whatever. That's just, you know, maybe I'm being a grumpy old man. Get off my lawn.
I agree with you that they ruined a little bit of it by making it a whole. But that's the joke. In the movie, they're like that. Rather like they kind of reference like Toxin and stuff like that. And Riot's the bad guy. Rather than being children of Venom, they only took 3 or 4 off of it. But the whole plot of Venom is they found over 100,000 symbiotes on the inside of a meteor going through space. And it's like, come on, that's so stupid. It's kind of similar to the comics though, with having a planet these days.
But, did you look at Web of Venom Carnage Born? Did you read that one? The most recent one?
I ordered it, but I don't have it yet from my friend who picks them up first.
Yeah. Oh man.
I definitely ordered it cause I love Carnage.
It's one of the worst comics I've ever read in my life.
Have you ever read? I know we're getting off topic. Have you ever read Carnage USA?
Was that the one that was in his own?
One of my favorite miniseries.
Was that the one? Oh, it was a miniseries? No, I don't. The only Carnage that I've read, other than when he like first appeared in Spider-Man, and there was the Maximum Carnage. Event within the Spider-Man books. The only other thing I read was when they relaunched. I think it was after the most recent Secret Wars miniseries, Jonathan Hickman's Secret Wars, when Jerry Conway did a Carnage. I read like the first couple issues of that and I thought it was pretty good, but I dropped it just because, you know, I can't read everything. But I wanted to get back to it, but I just never did. And then I read this.
This is before the new Secret Wars. So this is like
Carnage USA.
This is during Marvel Now.
No, never read it.
Carnage USA. It's a Carnage takes over a small Colorado town. Like literally like they are a meatpacking town. So he feeds off the meat and infects everyone in the town. And Spider-Man and Agent Venom, which is Flash Thompson, have to stop him together. And even the Avengers show up and they get infested by Carnage. And it's so dark. It's gotta be high. I don't know how they rate comic exactly, but it has to be a mature rated or whatever, because there's a scene where Carnage has everyone in the church infested and they have to pull their own teeth out of their head and stuff. And it's like,
you know,
that's Cletus Cassidy, you know.
I always used to say I'm not a fan of horror comic kind of, but you know, I've become more of a fan of horror comic, but it's almost like the suspense or the thriller kind of the same thing with the movies, but the ones I don't like are like the slasher, you know, I don't need to see a lot of blood and gore and,
well, they don't show a lot of it. It's the implication.
Yeah. But
you know, it's a comic book. Yeah. It's not a horror movie.
Yeah. Even the implication though, it's like, cause I mean, that's a lot of what you see in that web of Venom, Carnage Born thing, or, you know, they're like eating people and drinking blood and everything. It's like,
there's a lot of that too.
So. I'm good. I it's just not my cup of tea. I'll be interesting to hear your opinion on it though, because man, I thought the art was just, I've been reading a lot more Marvel lately, as you know, and one of the things that's like really striking to me is how, when you compare just, you know, grab a random five artists from DC and grab a random five artists from Marvel, and it's no contest. The DC guys are professional. It looks good. The Marvel stuff is, it's not even average comic art. It's bad. There's stuff, and there are people I've never heard of, and it just,
I feel like there's a lot more, at least with the big titles that I read, like Spider-Man, Spectacular Amazing, the big Deadpool books, that kind of stuff, that they're really, there's more range of different looks in the Marvel comics than the DC comics. That's true.
I'll give you that, but
they're almost giving them more freedom, and maybe that is costing them some quality in certain.
But even big books like Tony Stark Iron Man, the art's terrible.
I haven't read the books, but so you're probably right. But like a lot of the books I read, I appreciate that Deadpool looks completely different than even the last arc of Deadpool or Amazing Spider-Man right now, or when Spectacular Spider-Man had like a time travel storyline that something looked like a 60s book, and it was brilliant.
I think that. Like, as much as I like Invincible, I'm not a huge fan of Ryan Otley's style. And, you know, he does Amazing Spider-Man right now. And to me, Amazing Spider-Man right now looks like it looks like Invincible. It looks like an Invincible comic disguised as a Spider-Man comic. But, you know,
I'm a little behind on that one. So I have a stack to read.
I don't think he's, you know, he probably wouldn't even be in my top 20 Spider-Man artists. I mean, the art is serviceable and it's a heck of a lot better than a lot of the Marvel artists that are working now. But is it great comic art? Is it classic Spider-Man art? You know, compare it to like Steve Ditko or John Romita Sr. or anything like that. I don't think it holds a candle to it. So even on the big books where I really feel like, man, they should be making an effort to put out something good, they're really not. So anyway, I'm sharing my screen right now. Can you see this?
Yeah.
Look at the eyelashes. What is
that? That's Blade lashes.
That's awful. It's awful.
Wolverine lashes.
Look at it. It's just awful. Look at this.
What book is this?
This is the Carnage Born.
Oh.
It's,
yeah, this is bad.
Yeah. There's no other
way. I like that one.
Which one?
Just the Carnage face thing. I don't know.
This one?
Again, it looks like, no, above that, where it actually had his face. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not bad. That's the thing that gets me. I was talking about this book on Marvel Monday, last week's Marvel Monday, and there are times when the art is good enough that it shows you that this guy can draw, right? Like this
that's
looks
cool.
I think that looks terrible, but this looks terrible. I mean, just
the overall art. I don't know.
This, not even the overall art, this the right image. Here, this is good art. Draw like this all the time. What's instead of like this, what is that? What is that?
Yeah, I'll have to read that later. I'll read it when I get it.
What is this? So anyway, it's just disappointing. But yeah, I have no inside knowledge, and even if I did, I probably couldn't say. And there's plenty of artists I could ask who I'm, you know, good enough friends with that they would tell me. But from what I'm understanding and kind of the feeling I get is DC is paying a much higher page rate right now than Marvel. So as an artist, why wouldn't you want to go and work for the company that's going to pay you the most money, you know? There's no benefits. There's no retirement. There's no vacation time. You got to make the money while you can, you know, because you never know what, you know, as a freelancer, when your next project might be your last. So I don't begrudge them for wanting to work with the company that's going to pay them the most money. So, and I just feel like, man, Disney's got all the money in the world. Don't they own the planet Earth by now? I think they could afford to up their page rates. So Anyway, we've wandered far from the topic of Thanos. There's one issue left of Thanos Rising. I think that if you're a fan of Thanos, it's a must read. Because it really gives you some insight. You get to see some growth of Thanos, and there's a lot of food for thought in as much as, okay, was Thanos born this way? Is there something that happened to him along the way? Is it death's influence? And with one issue left, and, you know, of course I've already read it, you know, read it when it first came out, but I don't think there's a definitive answer, but it's one of those series that kind of poses the question and then gives you a lot of information, and it's up to you as the reader to kind of make up your own mind, so to speak. So one issue to go, and Thanos and his pirates are headed to Titan. So I really can't wait to finish this off, and I'm really excited to dive into some of the really early issues of Thanos. After this, I think we're going to be doing the first appearance of Thanos in Iron Man 55. And then of all comics following that, it's Logan's Run, right? Like the classic movie with Michael York from the late 70s, early 80s. There used to be a Logan's Run Marvel comic. And in one of the issues, there's a backup in that issue that features Thanos. And it's actually more of a Drax the Destroyer.
Yeah.
Issue or story than it is Thanos, but the next thing that we'll read is going to be reading the first appearance will be a Logan's Run, a backup story in we don't have to read the main Logan's Run comic, but Logan's Run 6.
Good, I want to spoil the story.
I was going through the chronology, and I was like, what is this Logan's Run? Is that like Logan's Run? I mean, I love that movie when I was a kid. So I'm like, we're reading Logan's Run? Like what? And then when I dove into it a little bit deeper, I read, so for whatever reason, they put a Drax the Destroyer comic story, whatever, in the back of a Logan's Run book. So then after that, it's a lot of Captain Marvel and Avengers issues, which will basically take us up through the Avengers versus Thanos, and finally the death of Captain Marvel. And then there's a huge break, right? Like Thanos supposedly was killed, turned into a statue, you know, we'll get there. And then he appeared in the Death of Captain Marvel graphic novel, as I've mentioned several times. But he was dead, but he appeared kind of in flashback, or Captain Marvel's hallucinating or anything, but he wasn't actually alive, but he does appear in that book. And then he doesn't appear in that. And I think that graphic novel came out in 81 or 82. He doesn't show back up in Marvel Comics, which this would never happen these days, especially not a character as charismatic and as, because Thanos was popular even back then. He doesn't show up until the Infinity Gauntlet, which was 1990. And actually right before the Infinity Gauntlet, the two issue Thanos Quest prestige series, which is a really hard series to get your hand on. They're really expensive. Right from the start, even when Infinity Gauntlet came out and it was a big hit in the 1990, long before there were any superhero movies, long before Thanos was on the big screen, those two issues of the prestige format were like $50 because nobody ordered them and they were just really scarce. But a lot of people, once they read Infinity Gauntlet, wanted that story. Well, how did Thanos come back from the dead? And that was the story in that two-part Thanos quest. So they were really hard to get. So, but we'll cover the Thanos quest, and then we'll get into the Infinity Gauntlet, Infinity War, Infinity Crusade. So there's a ton of Thanos content to read, and we'll get to a big chunk of it over the next few months. But I'm really excited to read that classic Thanos stuff from the late 70s and early 80s. And then, again, to my earlier point, can you imagine a character as popular as Thanos being like completely out of comics for 8 years? Like showed up in like 8 or 9 years, like 81, I think, was Death of Captain Marvel. And he had been dead for a few years before that. He'd been dead from like 79. So really you're talking like 79 to 1990, 11 years with no writer having resurrected him. Nowadays, they don't even stay dead for an issue, kill them at the end of one issue, and the next issue, they're alive again.
Yep.
So
they had more self-control back then,
I suppose.
And less comics a month, probably.
Who would you say is a character recently who died that you were surprised they didn't actually bring him back sooner? Is there anybody that comes to mind?
No, because like maybe Wolverine, but like
it's kind of what I remember. Thinking.
Black Widow came back so quick. I love the series that Black Widow came back in, but she came back so quick after Secret Empire
and
that
so
it's
did,
like
and so
nobody's did. Business. It was not a surprise. It's like, oh, she's back quicker than I thought.
Yeah, and so did like, Hulk. And the Hulk came back super fast too.
Yeah, Hulk came back. Actually, Hulk took a little bit longer than I thought. I was a little bit because the Hulk came was killed a whole miniseries earlier. Then I had a fake Hulk come back with Secret Empire, but not actually Amadeus Bruce Banner Cho, Hulk.
Right.
But so yeah, that one actually did surprise me how long they let the Hulk stay.
I'm surprised.
Which wasn't very long.
The X-Men seem to stay dead a little longer. You know, Cyclops has been gone a long time. Jean Grey was gone a long time. Cyclops has been gone a long time. And yeah, Wolverine, he's been gone a shorter period of time than the rest of them. But just based on his popularity, I thought they would have brought him back faster. But the other thing, we talked about this when we covered the Hunt for Wolverine miniseries is, man, there's no shortage of Wolverines out there, even if it's not the...
You'll read Old Man Logan instead and be fine.
Dead Man Logan now, right? I did order issue one, so...
Yeah, I saw... I can't afford that many comics, so I didn't get that one, but yeah.
See, that's why you need to be on the podcast more to get the review copies. Yeah, you don't have time to read them anyway. Neither do I.
I don't have time to read them either.
I know. It's such a challenge. Look at us complaining about free comics that we don't have time to read. People are like, shut up. We paid $5 a piece. Hey, man, I my DCBS order is a couple $100 every month. So believe me, I'm still.
Yeah.
And not only do I order $200 that comes once a month from DCBS, I still go to the local comic shop every single Wednesday and spend, you know, another $30 or $40 on. Oh, I didn't know that's what the variant cover was going to look like. I got to have that. Oh, I forgot to order that. Or, you know, I wasn't sure. I'm flipping through. Yeah, so, yeah. Spend way too much money on comics, believe me. So
I just got a plug. Not even a real plug, but like me and my friend have been going to Mile High Comics for a long time. And since I've been a subscriber, they hooked me up with the variant almost every time without me special ordering it. So that's really sweet.
Yeah, I mean, I could.
Like, on the first host, I have all variant covers. Not because I ordered it, because they're like, oh, Nick's been here forever. Let's just give him the variant since we have a bunch of them.
Well, that's cool. I mean, I mostly get the DC variants. And the problem is, you know, when I ordered DC from DCBS, a lot of times the variant cover, you have no idea what it looks like yet because it hasn't been completed.
Yeah. And so, it is random in this way. Like I have a bunch of Justice League Dark variants.
Yeah, Greg Capullo's been doing
Batman variants because they just give them to me.
Yeah, sometimes I'll pick it up just based on who the artist is. Like, that's probably going to be a good variant because I like that particular artist. But then sometimes it comes out and I'm like, man, I'd rather would have had the regular cover. So honestly, I just wish
they'd I'm not picky. When I see a variant, I'm like, oh, this might be worth more money one day. Not that I'm ever selling this. Yeah. It's too important.
I used to kind of do that. I used to kind of do that too. Like, you know, buy a few books here and there, you know, speculating, oh, maybe, but I'm never going to sell it. So I really stopped doing that because I'm like, yeah, it might be worth money someday, but I'm not going to sell it anyway. So if you don't want it, if you're not buying it to read it, then, you know, what's the point?
I will say my Batman Damned issue jumped in value long before I ever got it. I didn't get it until 2 months after it came out, and it jumped in value in that time.
Yeah, I have a couple of copies. I wish I'd picked up more, obviously, because I would have sold some of them.
I only did one, but
I've got I have the one regular and one variant. And I almost was going to pick up another copy when it came out. And I was like, I'm trying to cut back. And then, the whole bat wang hit the fan and didn't even get me started on that. So anyway,
Bruce, real dick, I say.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, let's go ahead and wrap it up. We want to thank everybody for joining us as always. Please tell your friends about us, subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please be sure to check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram. to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
Yeah, go watch that Captain Marvel trailer now, Nick.
No, seriously.